Hello and welcome to this Security Talk series presentation. My name is Graham Calladine, and in this session we are going to look at the Windows Azure role security. We shall investigate the role types, configurations, and how to secure the roles and the operations required to make all of the Azure roles secure. The diagram shows a simplified design of the typical service running in the Windows Azure cloud. The application would consist of the following: a network load balancer provided by Windows Azure, which receives the client requests coming from the internet to the virtual IP addresses. The requests are load balanced across front-end components, which run the code that interfaces with the external clients. These virtual machines do not persist state and can be provisioned and deprovisioned at will. Back-end processing and long-running compute code run in the middle-tier components, processing requests coming from the front-end and performing background tasks on the data stores. Data is persisted in storage services such as Windows Azure Storage and SQL Azure. A core concept in Windows Azure is the concept of roles. A role is how Windows Azure represents a single component that contains code that runs in the Windows Azure compute services. A typical Windows Azure service will have the roles with the front-end code and roles that will perform back-end processing, which together will define the overall application. Windows Azure runs the roles inside the individual virtual machines and provisions as many instances of these VMs as required by the service configuration. Roles are customized by the application developer from basic images provided by Windows Azure. Currently, Windows Azure supports three types of images: web, worker, and VM. Windows Azure provides three types of roles: the web role, the worker role, and the VM role. In general, these roles can be described in the following manner. The web role is a service component that is customized for web application programming, as supported by Internet Information Services version 7 and ASP.NET. The web role is intended to serve as a front end to your hosted service. The worker role is a service component that is useful for generalized development and may perform background processing for a web role. A worker role is frequently used for long-running tasks that are non-interactive, but you can host any type of workload. The VM role is a special type of service component that offers the ability to fully control the operating system image of the virtual machine. The advantage of using a VM role is the ability to easily update the operating system image and to directly install applications. A service must include at least one role of either type, but may consist of any number of web roles or worker roles. And the fabric controller is responsible for provisioning and managing the role instances. In Windows Azure, the web role contains websites or other code that is supported by Internet Information Services. Typically, this is an ASPX page or a web service, but you can use other web development tools such as a hypertext preprocessor like PHP to provide your services. An ASP.NET web role in Windows Azure is similar to an ASP.NET web application in that it is built with ASPX files and source code, but it includes additional tools that allow you to run in the Windows Azure environment. A web role can also host most other applications that use the HTTP protocol, such as FastCGI or a WCF service. In its latest version, Windows Azure web roles can access the full power of IIS. When you create an application for Windows Azure, it is configured to use the full capabilities of IIS. The web role service model supports multiple websites and applications in a single web role instance. The web role provides a low total cost of ownership environment for running web applications, and developers can leverage a web platform that is pre-built and maintained by Microsoft. The developer only needs to publish the application code. The worker role provides a generalized environment for hosting applications on Windows Azure. The primary difference between a web role and a worker role is support for IIS. The web role is tooled to present an interface through IIS-hosted websites and a web application. In contrast, the worker role is a flexible and open-ended system. Most types of applications can be hosted in a worker role, including those that use non-.NET languages or run unmanaged code. The types of tasks a worker role is typically used for are long-running tasks that are asynchronous, that the user does not have to wait for, hosted application services that do not require a user interface, background services listening to a queue, running TCP-based services, or compute-intensive jobs. Like the web role, the worker role also provides a low total cost of ownership by having Microsoft building and maintaining the underlying platform, including updating the OS, with the developer only having to publish the packaged application code. VM role allows developers to upload and run a customized Windows Server 2008 R2 image. In this role, the developers have full control of the system image, and it is especially suited for migrating existing applications to run as hosted services in Windows Azure. Because you control the operating system and any updates to the operating system, it is unique from other types of role instances that run in a hosted service in Windows Azure. When you have long and complicated installations in the operating system or setup procedure that cannot be automated, you should use this role. The VM role inherits some of the web role and worker role restrictions of Windows Azure, but you are free to manage the VM role to fit your needs. The VM role consists of an operating system that is constructed using base virtual hard drives, or VHDs, and optionally one or more differencing disks. The VM role also contains a service definition file and a service configuration file, which are used by the Fabric controller to provision the role instances. You create VHD images by using the Hyper-V Manager running on Windows Server 2008 or the Windows Server 2008 R2. This server is referred to as the source server. In addition to the Hyper-V server role, the source server should also have IIS, ASP.NET, and the Windows Azure SDK installed. You then create the base image using Windows Server 2008 R2 Media as the starting point. The base image should also have the Windows Azure VM integration components, which includes the agents and drivers required for running the operating system on top of the Windows Azure Fabric. After creating the base VHD, you can use it as a source to all of your initial VM role instances and your differencing VHD images. The differencing VHD images contain the customizations required for the specific role on top of the base image. By having a common base image and saving the customizations in a separate VHD, you can update more easily your VM roles as well as saving disk space. After you create a VHD image, you are ready to deploy it to the Windows Azure. You use the CS upload command line tool to upload the base or differencing VHD image to Windows Azure, which are then stored in the Windows Azure Storage Blob service. A Windows Azure role consists of three pieces. The definition file contains the specifications of the Windows Azure role, including the type and size of the virtual machine, the network endpoints that it will be listening to, and the name and the store of the certificates that will be provisioned to it. It also specifies which modules need to be imported into the VM image to provide functionality such as remote desktop access and Windows Azure Connect. The configuration file specifies runtime parameters like the number of instances for the role and the number of update and fault domains, and the value of the configuration settings such as the username and password to use for remote access, or of the certificate that will be used to actually associate to a particular certificate name in the role. The configuration is kept separate from the definition, so these runtime parameters and settings can be updated from one environment to another, say from staging to production, without having to change the role definition. The code contains the actual application code that will be deployed on the role. In case of a web and worker roles, this is a package containing executables, DLLs, and additional files, such as web pages, and in the case of a VM role, it is the reference to a VHD image stored in the Windows Azure Storage Blob service. The Windows Azure service model consists of the following components. The service definition file defines the roles available to a service, specifies the service endpoints, and establishes the configuration settings for the service. The service configuration file specifies the number of role instances to deploy for each role in the service, the values of any configuration settings, and the thumbprints for any certificates associated with a role. For VM roles, it also defines references that the image will run by that role. The CSPAC program is used to combine the services definition and the service configuration files with the actual application code into a Windows Azure service package, which is then uploaded to Windows Azure. The service configuration file is kept separate to the service package file as it can be updated independently of the service package, for example, to update settings or increase or decrease the number of instances of each of the roles. When provisioning a role instance, the Fabric controller will contact the Windows Azure host agent running on the root VMs and pushes the role definition files, the configuration files, and the application code. The host agent then creates three VHD files. A difference in VHD for the OS image, named Decolon. And note here, for web roles and worker roles, the Fabric controller guest agent is injected into this image. A resource VHD for user temporary files named C:, and a role VHD for role specific files named using the next available drive letter. The host agent then creates the virtual machine, attaches the VHD drives to it, and then starts the VM. The guest agent is initialized by the OS, which then calls the role entry point that initializes the role, including the diagnostics and health monitoring between the guest and the host agent. At that point, the Fabric controller considers the instance ready. And note that Windows Azure load balancers periodically probe the input endpoints in the role instances using a HTTP GET request and only routes the traffic to an instance after a successful probe response. Securing the Windows Azure role takes a defense-in-depth approach. At the data layer, access to the data stored in Azure is controlled using strong storage access keys that are provisioned to the customer. All access to the data can be and should be done over SSL to protect the confidentiality and the integrity of the data while in transit over the network. At the application layer, the Azure developers have the choice to run their front-end code under the Windows Azure Partial Trust, a sandbox that blocks access to native non.NET components and helps ensure the integrity of the platform. Customer code can also be run under a low privileged user account. At the host level, Azure Virtual Machines run the latest Windows Server 2008 R2 operating system from Microsoft, with the option of using pre-configured virtual machine roles, web and worker, where the OS is constantly patched and updated by Microsoft. Virtual machine boundaries are enforced by the underlying hypervisor and do not depend on the security of the VM Windows operating system. At the network level, all traffic to and from the virtual machines are filtered according to the policy defined by the customer and enforced by a firewall on the virtual machine as well as a firewall running on the host root system. Microsoft also deploys VLANs and packet filters to segregate the network access between customers, management systems and the internet, and uses special devices to protect its infrastructure against distributed denial of service attacks. Access to the management API is secured using certificates, which we'll discuss in the next slide. Windows Azure provides a secure certificate store which enables automatic deployment of service-specific certificates to your role instances. Each Windows Azure subscription has an associated store to which you can upload certs to. The store is independent of any hosted service or package, so you can store certs whether or not they are currently being used by any of your services. The store has two primary purposes. The certs can be used for authenticating the calls to the Service Management API, such as those done from PowerShell scripts or the Windows Azure MMC. You can provision certificates to the VM role instances where they will be used for HTTPS traffic for authentication and password encryption and other purposes. To ensure access to the Service Management API is secure, you must first associate a cert with your subscription. Up to 5 different certs can be associated to a subscription. and the certificates do not need to be trusted by Windows Azure, i.e. they can be self-signed. But there is a requirement that the key should be greater or equal to 2048 bits. Certificates can be managed separately from your services and may be managed by different individuals. For example, a developer may upload a service package that refers to a certificate that an IT manager has previously uploaded to Windows Azure. An IT manager can manage and renew that certificate without stopping the service or uploading a new service package. This is possible because the logical name for the certificate and its store name and location are specified in the service definition file, while the service footprint is specified in the service configuration file. To update the certificate, it is only necessary to upload a new certificate and change the footprint value in the service config file. This slide and the next one describe the workflow to add a cert to the Windows Azure cert store and then associating it to a service. In this scenario, the IT manager and the service developer are presumed to be two different people, but they can also be the same person. An IT manager exports a certificate to a PFX file, and this may be done using the Cert Manager utility. The Cert Manager utility exports the cert to a file with the private key. The IT manager then uploads the PFX file to Windows Azure, either via the Windows Azure portal or by using the Windows Azure Service Management API. The uploaded certificate can then be used by a service or simply stored in the subscription cert store. If the cert is part of a chain of certificates, best practices recommend uploading all of the certs in the chain to Windows Azure, and this can be done by setting the Cert Manager utility to include all certificates in the chain when exporting. The second part of the task is performed by the service developer. The service developer associates a cert with a specific role within the service definition file. The cert entry in the service definition file provides a name for the cert that can be used to associate it with a cert thumbprint that is given in the service config file. In the case where the cert will be used for SSL, the cert name can be associated with a HTTPS endpoint, and the name can be any value the service developer chooses. The service developer adds an entry for the cert to the service config file using the name that was provided in the service definition file. This entry also specifies the cert thumbprint and the thumbprint algorithm. Windows Azure uses the thumbprint to identify the cert within the subscription cert store and deploys the cert to the VMs that will run the roles instances. And note, the IT manager provides a cert thumbprint and a thumbprint algorithm to the service developer. The thumbprint identifies the cert, but it is not sensitive information, and the thumbprint algorithm specifies the algorithm used to generate the thumbprint itself. When considering network endpoints, the only ports open and addressable internally or externally for incoming network traffic on a VM are endpoints explicitly defined in the service definition file. The Windows firewall is enabled on each VM, in addition to enhanced VM switch packet filtering, which blocks unauthorized traffic. Now, the service definition file defines both external and internal endpoints, where an external endpoint can receive incoming traffic from the internet. A web role can have no more than one HTTP endpoint or one HTTPS endpoint, but a worker role may have any number of TCP endpoints. An internal endpoint is available only to another role instance running within the service. It is not available to clients outside the service. External and internal endpoints are configured in the service definition file, which defines the endpoints for each Windows Azure role. Endpoints can either be HTTP, HTTPS, or TCP, depending on the role type. In all cases, the service definition specifies the listening port for the endpoint. For HTTPS endpoints, the definition should also associate the endpoint to a cert that is identified in the service definition file. The cert needs to be uploaded to the Windows Azure Cert Management Store, and the thumbprint of the cert should also be stored in the service configuration file. Windows Azure now provides customers elevated access to the Windows Azure role instance. This level of access allows the ability to further customize the role configuration and also to use the administrator privileges to debug and troubleshoot issues in your application. Since changes to the operating system are not persisted in the role instance, any customization using elevated privileges need to be automated using startup tasks that are executed during the role instance provisioning. Windows Azure offers the ability to have elevated startup tasks that can be used to perform tasks like COM component registration, IIS site configuration, and changes to protected registry keys. A startup task is either an executable or a script, executed prior to the start of a role instance. The command can perform setup tasks that are required to prepare the environment for the application. This could be installing application or registering COM components, or registering performance counters, for example. Startup tasks can run with either low privileges or elevated privileges, and the tasks are defined in the service definition file for the Azure role. And each task configured includes the command line, the execution contents, either limited or elevated, and the type of task it needs to run. This is either a simple task where the system waits for the task to exit before other tasks are launched, a background task where the system does not wait for the task to exit, i.e. it's asynchronous, and a foreground task, which is similar to the background except the role is not restarted until all foreground tasks exit. In its latest release, Windows Azure introduces full IIS support in the web role VMs. This allows the service administrator to configure a web role to run multiple sites or virtual applications, each running in its own application pool under its own user account. This provides a lot of flexibility in defining privileges for web application components. For example, you could grant different websites with access to different resources such as file system paths or certificates, or deny access to specific files for web-specific applications. Configuring IIS application pool identities and defining file and registry ACLs can be done by setting a startup task that will run with elevated privileges. This task could launch a PowerShell script that sets access control lists, which allows each of your applications to access the resources it needs. Permissions available to a role deployed to Windows Azure depend on the trust level with which the role is published. The two levels of trust available are partial trust and full trust, and by default, roles deployed to Windows Azure run under full trust. If you are developing a role that includes calls to native code, then you must run that role under full trust. The Windows Azure full trust environment offers access to native libraries and resources that are restricted under partial trust. Additionally, you must run the role under full trust in order to access Windows Azure diagnostics via the Windows Azure Managed Library. The Windows Azure Partial Trust policy is similar to the standard medium trust policy for ASP.NET Code, but it is even stricter. The restrictions imposed under Windows Azure Partial Trust are as follows. No calls to native code. No access to native libraries or resources. No access to Windows Azure diagnostics via the Windows Azure Managed Library. Read file access to the file system, to application directories and named local stores. Write and append access only to named local stores. No registry access permissions. Access only to the temp and TMP environment variables. And no event log access permission either. It is recommended that you use partial trust whenever possible in your applications. If you need the use of FastCGI or PHP, need to migrate traditional web services to the cloud, role invocation or spawning of Windows subprocesses, native code or managed code, calls into native libraries via pinvoke, then you will need to run that role with full trust. If a role does not require that functionality, then enable Windows Azure Partial Trust. This option not only minimises the attack footprint of the role in question, but it also helps reduce damage caused by a compromised role. An important note about Windows Azure roles is that they do not persist information on the VM instance. All persisted information should be stored in the Windows Azure Storage Service. The Storage Service stores information in a storage account in the form of tables, queues, blobs, or NTFS drives. Application code can write information to local drives in a temporary file system storage area called local storage, and this provides fast storage areas for usage like caching. Local storage, however, is not shared across role instances, and it is not saved across role updates. Local storage for Windows Azure roles is configured in the service definition file as shown. Windows Azure Storage has a simple access control model. Each Windows Azure subscription can create one or more storage accounts, and each storage account has a single secret key called the Storage Account Key, or SAK. This is used to control access to all data in that storage account. And this supports a typical scenario where storage is associated with an application, and those applications have full security control over their associated data. Any application that wants to have access to data in the storage account needs to have the appropriate SAK. A more sophisticated access control model can be achieved by creating a custom application front-end to the storage, giving the application the storage key and letting the application authenticate remote users and even authorize the individual storage requests. Storage account keys can be reset via the Windows Azure portal or SMAPI. To support periodically changing the SAKs without any breaks in service, a storage account can have two secret keys associated with it at the same time, where either of the key gives full access to all the data. The sequence for changing the secret key is to add the new one as the authorized key to the storage service, and then change the key used by all applications accessing the service, and finally remove the old key so that it will no longer be authorized. We will now move our attention to the Windows Azure VM operations. We'll cover some of the deployment and management tools available, including the newly introduced support for remote desktop into the Windows Azure role instances. We'll see how Windows Azure services are updated, covering how Microsoft automates the platform updates and the approaches you can use for updating your code. We'll also see the resources available for monitoring the health of a deployment. First, let's dive into the deployment and management tools. We've already talked about the CS Manage executable previously, and now we'll look at more detail into the service management for the PowerShell commandlets, the Windows Azure OMC, and the remote desktop itself. Microsoft provides a set of PowerShell commandlets wrapping the Windows Azure Service Management API and Diagnostics API. These commandlets make it simple to script out your deployments, upgrades, and scaling out of your Windows Azure applications, as well as setting and managing your diagnostics configuration. Search MSDN for the Azure Service Management commandlets to get a full list of the operations available. Basically, the scripts allow you to query your hosted services, manage your storage accounts, deploy new services, perform service upgrades, update configurations, and remove services as well. Every call to the Windows Azure Service Management API requires an X509 certificate and the subscription ID for the account. To get started, you'll need to upload a valid certificate to the portal and have it installed locally onto your workstation. The Windows Azure MMC is the Microsoft Management Console snap-in that provides graphical management for compute services, storage services, certificates, and diagnostics. It provides most of the functionality available in Windows Azure Portal, and for diagnostics it allows instrumentation for the Windows Azure applications. It allows transfer of the diagnostic data on demand or scheduled, with the ability to export for Excel and other tools. The Windows Azure MMC is built on top of the Windows Azure Service Management API, and it uses the PowerShell commandlet running in the back end that the user can either run or extend separately if required. The latest Windows Azure release adds the ability to use remote desktop services to access your Windows Azure role instances. Administrators can enable remote desktop access to the Windows Azure roles using the Windows Azure Development Portal, and then connect to the role instances using the remote desktop client. Remote desktop access is a powerful management tool that can help debug and troubleshoot issues. But note, the changes performed using remote desktop, like all changes to the role instance, are not persisted. Remote desktop in Windows Azure role instances is enabled by importing the remote desktop functionality into the definition of the Windows Azure role. Support for remote desktop is provided using two imports, remote access and remote forwarder. Remote access allows you to turn on and off remote desktop capabilities on a role instance and create a user account using the configuration settings in your service configuration. Remote access should be imported on every role you want to be able to connect to. The remote forwarder provides forwarding service that listens for connections on your virtual IP address and then forwards them to the appropriate dedicated IP address. Since the remote forwarder defines an input endpoint, it must be imported on a single role. At least one of the roles needs to have the remote forwarder module in the role definition. Importing remote access in a service without the role that has the remote forwarder results in your instance having port 3389 open on the internal IP address, but no listening port open on the virtual IP address in the load balancer. If you want to deploy a single role service and remote into it, you can simply import remote access and the remote forwarder on the same role. The remote desktop feature is role agnostic. You can use any combination of web worker role or VM roles to host either remote forwarder or remote access. Support for remote desktop is enabled in the service definition file for each role. The remote desktop access in the role instances is enabled by importing the remote access module. And while the role can also be configured as an input endpoint for the remote desktop, this can be done by importing the remote forwarder module. After remote desktop is enabled in the service definition file, the configuration settings are defined in the service configuration file. When the remote access module is imported, the following settings are included in the configuration file. Enable. This defines in the configuration file whether the remote desktop access is enabled or not for that role instance. This allows you to enable or disable remote desktop without changing the role definition. The account username and the account expiration defines the username for the remote desktop authentication and the deadline for expiring the defined authentication credentials. The account encrypted password contains the password to use for the username authentication encrypted in PKSCS #7 format with the password certificate that is provisioned to the role. This encryption is automated using the management tools such as Visual Studio or the Windows Azure Development Portal. The Windows Azure Guest Operating System is the operating system that runs on the virtual machines that host your service. The Guest Operating System is updated monthly. You can choose to upgrade the Guest OS for your service automatically each time an update is released, or you can perform the upgrades manually at the time of your choosing. All role instances defined by your service will run on the Guest Operating System version that you specify. For web and working roles, the Guest OS version is specified in the service configuration file using the OS version parameter. By selecting star, the role will always use the latest available Guest OS version, effectively outsourcing to Microsoft the task of updating the OS image. You can also manually update from one version to another by changing the service configuration file. All role instances will run on the Guest Operating System version specified for the role. To ensure that your service works as expected, you can deploy the latest image to a release of Windows Azure Guest Operating System that is compatible with the version of the Windows Azure SDK with which you have been developing with. Windows Azure introduces the concept of fault domains and upgrade domains for achieving very high availability in the service. A fault domain is a physical unit of failure and is closely related to the physical infrastructure in a data center. It represents a group of resources that are anticipated that can fail together. In Windows Azure, the rack itself can actually be considered as a fault domain. However, there is no one-to-one mapping between fault domains and the rack itself. The fabric controller is responsible for deploying instances of your application in different fault domains. Obviously, this only applies if you run more than one instance. Right now, the fabric controller makes sure that your application uses at least two fault domains. However, depending on the capacity and the VM availability, it may happen that it is spread across more than that. But note, as a developer, you have no direct control over how many fault domains your application will use. An upgrade domain is a logical unit which determines how a particular service will be upgraded. The default number of upgrade domains that are configured for your application is 5. You can control how many upgrade domains your application will use through the upgrade domain configuration setting in the service definition file. The upgrade domains are orthogonal to fault domains. The Windows Azure Fabric Controller ensures that a particular upgrade domain is not within a single fault domain, and roles are spread out over the upgrade domains and fault domains. With a reasonable number of instances, this removes the risk of a single point of failure existing during the upgrade process. Here we can see a graphical view of fault and upgrade domains together. It illustrates that the Windows Azure service is spread out across both the fault and upgrade domains. So the loss of a fault domain will not cause a failure of the service, nor will the restart or change of an upgrade domain cause a failure of the service as well. You have three options for updating a deployed Windows Azure service. Redeploying the service by suspending and then deleting the service, and then deploying a new version. Perform a staged deployment by uploading the new package and swap it with the existing production version. This is referred to as a VIP swap because it simply swaps the visible IP addresses of the services. Or perform an in-place upgrade. The new package is uploaded and applied to the running instance of the service. There are options that allow you to update individual instances of individual roles within each instance. The first of these three options, redeployment, requires downtime for your service, while the second two options allow you to perform updates without incurring service downtime. However, there are limitations on the changes you can make to a deployed service when using staged or in-place upgrades. The general rules for following the appropriate type of updates are as follows. If you need to change the number or type of endpoints for existing roles, you must delete and redeploy the service. If you need to change the service definition, you must perform a staged VIP swap deployment, or you can redeploy the service. If there is no change to the service definition file, you can perform an in-place update. Virtual IP swapping allows for minimal downtime upgrades by running two deployment slots, one for staging and one for production. You can upgrade your service by deploying a new package to the staging deployment slot and then swapping the staging and production deployments. This is the recommended approach if the service model has changed between versions. This type of upgrade is called a virtual IP or VIP swap, as it swaps the addresses of the two deployments. The load balancer is rewired when the VIP swap is performed to change the deployment slot that is listening on the production URL. The production IP address also remains unchanged during a VIP swap, and no downtime is incurred. Both deployments remain online during the swap process. If you do a VIP swap, you should aim to be running the same number of instances in both slots prior to the swap, and ensure instances in the staging area are running and are warm. Consider using inter-role communication to warm up the instances. This avoids the risk of doing a VIP swap on a 100 instance role and suddenly grind into a halt while the machine jits your code. This is just an animated slide of the VIP swap process. It starts just with the production slot deployed. The administrator then performs a deployment into the staging slot, and finally the VIP swap is performed, reassigning the IPs at the load balancer level. Here is a visualization of the walking upgrade sequence. You can see that the instance 1 of the web roles and worker roles are taken offline and upgraded, and then brought back online, and the same is then done for instance 2. Windows Azure provides a diagnostic API that gives developers the ability to collect and store a variety of diagnostics data in a highly configurable way. You can use the diagnostics data for tasks like debugging and troubleshooting, measuring performance, monitoring resource usage, traffic analysis and capacity planning, and even auditing. Once collected, the diagnostic data can be transferred to a Windows Azure storage account for persistence. You can configure the diagnostics from code running within the role or you can configure it remotely from an application running outside of Windows Azure. For example, you can manage the diagnostics from a custom dashboard application running locally. By managing the Windows Azure diagnostics remotely, you can start your service with an initial diagnostics configuration and then tweak that configuration from code running outside your service. One of the applications that uses the Diagnostics API is the Windows Azure Monitoring Management Pack for the Microsoft System Center. The Management Pack enables you to monitor the availability and performance of applications that are running on Windows Azure. The Windows Azure Monitoring Management Pack offers the discovery of Windows Azure applications, the health status of each role instance, collecting and monitoring of the Windows events and performance information, and changing the number of role instances via a task based on a collected piece of information. This module has covered the Windows Azure service model, the different role types, how to configure and provision those roles, and then moved on to securing those roles. And finally, we briefly covered the operations of Windows Azure using the Windows Azure Diagnostic API.
Check out the Windows Azure subscription options at http://bit.ly/try-Windows-Azure to find one that works for your business needs.